the road must have a code that she can live by. And so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well. Their father's hell did slowly go by. And feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by.
Hello, this is Athena Melville, your host for Education Now, welcoming you to the May 6th edition of Education Now. I really look forward to sharing this interview with Amy Boosinger on homeschooling. Parents are a child's first teachers, and over all these years, I've learned that parents gave up their role as teacher and counselor to their children, but they can regain their position. They can empower themselves to be the guide nature intended. Even if the child attends a school, public or private, the investment parents make in taking responsibility for guiding their child's process cannot be underestimated in its value to the life of the child. Montessori knew this when she came to California in the early part of the 20th century to train mostly mothers who wanted to raise independent, whole, healthy human beings. With the crisis in education in this country, and others might argue around the world, homeschooling has been growing rapidly. Here is what the latest statistics claim from a San Francisco Examiner article in September 2009 by Christy Herbert. Quote, achievement test scores for homeschool students are exceptionally high. Kids taught at home score across the board between the 75th and 80th percentile. Public school children tested on the same material consistently produce scores at the 50th percentile. The children in the study came from a mixture of gender, racial, and financial backgrounds. Each level of education was represented, ranging from kindergarten to 12th grade. All 50 states were also represented, including Guam and Puerto Rico. Well, the burning question in the mind of a skeptic is always, what happens after all these homeschool kids are released into the real world? University of Michigan professor Dr. Gary Knowles spent time researching adults who were home educated. An amazing 96% said they could do it, that if they could do it all over again, they would want to be homeschooled. Not a single one was unemployed or on welfare. That is pretty impressive. End of quote. So, let's go now and listen to this interview with Amy Boosinger. Amy Boosinger lives in Portland, Oregon, with her husband Chris and two sons, aged 15 and 18. They have been an eclectic homeschooling family since the boys were school age. Amy is a kitchen dweller, tea drinker, dancer, knowledge seeker, crafty mama, family lover, and friend who does all these things with passion and pride. She has a home-based natural body care and craft business and recently finished her training as a nutritional therapy practitioner. Remember, you can comment before, during, and after this podcast by going to the Education Now Facebook page or by sending me an email at hermes@pacific.net. So let's get to the interview with Amy, this wonderful human being. And I'll be back with you at the end of the interview for more commentary. Hello, Amy Boosinger, and welcome to Education Now. It's such a pleasure to have you here with me today on this beautiful morning here in Mendocino County. I don't know how it is there in Oregon. Is it a nice day?
It's threatening to rain.
It's threatening to rain. Well, here the sky is just perfectly blue, but of course I love the rain, and I you're not sick of the rain, are you?
No, it's what makes Oregon so lush and beautiful.
That's right. Yes, it is. Well, you know, I want our listeners to know that I've known you since you were, I think, about 10 years old when you came to Melville Montessori School and were just one of the most amazing students that I have had. This huge heart, so creative, dance, music, languages, you just a sparkle. And to hear that you homeschooled your own sons, Alex and Sev, who are now 15 and 18, right?
Correct, yep.
And could you tell our audience how this all started, Amy, how you... Why you decided to homeschool and what the process was from when they were really small, from, say, like kindergarten age, what you did?
Sure. Well, first I just want to say thank you for inviting me to do this. It's an honor, and those were very kind words that you just said about me, and I feel the same about you.
Oh.
And it's been a great adventure with lots of ups and downs, and it started when Sev, who's 18 now, was kindergarten age, and we lived in Santa Cruz at the time, and Chris and I were both full-time students, and so it just seemed appropriate to take him down to kindergarten and enroll him, and he had a really hard time the first couple of days with the teacher that he had. We had a family outing planned, and he was going to miss a day of school the first couple of days in, and he mentioned that to the teacher, and she jokingly told him, well, I'm not going to let you go. I'm going to lock you in a closet. And I know her intentions were to be funny and to joke with him, but when I picked him up that day, he was so upset and so distraught about her words, because he was just such a sensitive little feller, and that moment, it kind of made a really big impact on me. I hadn't given it a whole lot of thought about how much time he would be spending away from home at that age. But Chris and I were both full-time students and needed to figure out some other way for him to, you know, have care during the day. He ended up getting enrolled in a Waldorf kindergarten, and that was a wonderful experience, and he finished out the year doing that. But at that point, we kind of just looked at each other and realized there's a different way that we want to do this. And for us, it ended up being homeschooling. So that was kind of the very beginning of our journey, was having a couple experiences that sort of led us to looking into other options. And homeschooling was what we chose.
And how did you manage to do that since you were both students? How did you...
I wrapped up the program that I was doing the next year. So he finished out the year doing the Waldorf Kindergarten program, which was, you know, a really lovely program that they had in Santa Cruz and small. And then Alex was a toddler at the time, and we scheduled our days and our classes so that we would, you know, alternatively take care of him. And we had a family member, Chris's sister, with us, and she was a tremendous help. And so we just finished out that year in sort of a hectic manner, and then the next year I became a homeschooling mom.
Yes, and what did you find it challenging? Did you find any support for what you were doing in your community there in Santa Cruz?
In Santa Cruz, we ended up living there for probably another 6 months, and there's a lot of really wonderful things happening there in the homeschool community. I didn't necessarily tap into it as much as I probably would have had the kids been older. We then moved kind of a couple of different places after that and ended up settling for a good chunk of time, 6 years, in Los Angeles. And when we were there, really within the first 2 months of living there, we found such a wonderful homeschooling community. And there were so many resources. There were park days where people got together and socialized, all homeschooling families and groups of people that taught classes or hired people to do classes for the homeschooling community. And we were just so fortunate that we found that and had so many resources available to us. And that made a really big difference.
Yes, I would say so. It really helps to have a community. I know when I moved up here to Northern California, my intention was to homeschool my four boys. And then people just kept saying, well, since they're there with you, can my kids join you? And that's essentially, you know, how it started, how the school, Melville Montessori School, started was because I wanted to homeschool. And so it just makes me so happy that you homeschooled and you were successful at it. I mean, the kids, I see photographs of them and I hear about them and I know that they're very physically active and that they read a lot and they're very expressive, and it's just you and Chris have just done such an amazing job. So when
Thank you.
Yeah, so how long were you then in Los Angeles?
We were there for about 6 years, and we always have kind of chosen a pretty eclectic style of homeschooling. You know, there's people who kind of recreate home at school at home. There's people who, you know, take a real sort of radical, what a lot of people perceive as radical, unschooling approach, you know, and just let their kids decide what they want to do. We kind of walked in between, sort of making it up as we went along, and you know, really, the kids have done a lot of different kinds of things. And for us, our family, it ended up being such a beautiful match. It allowed us to, one, be really tight as a family unit because we were fortunate to be able to spend the amount of time together that we did.
Yes.
Two, it allowed us a lot of freedom in our life, which worked for us. We took lots of trips. We took lots of road trips. You know, one huge advantage we discovered early on in our time in Los Angeles was that we could go and experience museums and libraries and all these really rich cultural experiences and not have to fight the masses of people on the weekends, because we had the advantage of being able to go during the week. So
yes, I remember.
You know,
this.
I always said from the very, very beginning that I didn't choose to homeschool my children for academic excellence. I chose to homeschool them because I wanted them to, you know, be confident in who they were as people.
Yes.
And feel good about who they were and, you know, their character and their spirit. And I feel like in the end that, you know, now that we're kind of getting closer to sort of wrapping up our educational experiences with them, you know, with them being 15 and 18, that it worked. You know, they're both really confident, radiant beings, and I feel very fortunate to have had the experience that I did.
I agree with you so much, and I think those field trips and going when you are ready to go on this field trip and following them and letting them experience it without a whole mass of people with you is one of the greatest educational experiences that you could give a child. So I am just, you know, I just am so supportive of you, and I'm so excited that that was all happening in Los Angeles, you know, because I don't really hear a lot about that, you know, in Los Angeles. And then, of course, you know, were the kids ever saying to you, I want to go to public school, I want to be with other kids?
No, because we had, we had such an incredible group of people, of other families that were homeschooling. So, you know, that's one question that is often asked, I think, to families that homeschool. Well, what about socialization? You know, that's kind of a biggie. And, you know, our experience was it was that we had to be careful to not overbook socialization, you know, to have downtime, because we were connected with really wonderful families. And with that came the kids hanging out with a really diverse group and in ages also. You know, they had friends that were younger than them and friends that were older than them. And, you know, they were involved in my circle of friends and Chris's circle of friends and Chris's coworkers. And, you know, they can have a conversation with a 5-year-old and this conversation with a 50-year-old and everything in between. And I really appreciate that, that they've been able to develop that part of who they are.
Oh yes, that's just so important. And so you didn't stress. I mean, they both learned how to read, and you didn't stress that. I mean, you weren't stressed that they wouldn't be able to read. Oh my goodness, they're going.
I have to say that Sev, there was a short period of time that we lived in Willits, and Sev decided he wanted to try school, and it was second grade. And so I cannot take credit for him becoming a reader, because second grade was really pivotal. The time that he spent in public school, he really got a good grasp on reading. Alex, it was, you know, different because he was homeschooled, but he didn't try public school until he was in sixth grade when we moved to Oregon. And that was for him when he decided he wanted to see what school was like. And he did a couple months of school. And then decided that it wasn't a good match for him. But, so Sev became a reader kind of at the more traditional age early on. Alex a little bit later, but it was a pretty organic, thing, you know, him becoming a reader. He grew up in a house with a lot of books and people reading to him. And, you know, he struggled a little in the beginning, and now he's a voracious reader and with incredible comprehension skills. So I can't honestly say to you there wasn't times that I didn't stress, because that just wouldn't be true.
Right.
There have been times all along the journey where Chris and I have looked at each other and wondered if we were doing the right thing, and if it was all going to work out in the end. And so far, I have to say the experiment has been a double thumbs up. Both of the kids.
I would say so, just from what I hear. And I think that their ability to communicate with people of all ages, that people of all ages are their peers, says so much. And I think that, you know, as for life, what that will give them for life is, you can't measure that on any test. So it's just so exciting. And that they're so physical. A lot of times, you know, there's the fear, if they're homeschooled, well, they won't get involved in physical activity. And I see that your kids skateboard.
Yeah.
And that's just...
Yeah,
go ahead.
They're very passionate about skateboarding, I will say that. They have both been for many years, and for us, that was a way to incorporate, you know, again, kind of just the world at large into their learning experiences. For example, one of the things, once we moved to Oregon, that Chris and the kids, they built a skateboard ramp, and it took, you know, about 9 months. It was a long project, and that experience alone, you know, so much was gained from it. There was a lot of math that had to be figured out. There was a lot of, you know, cutting and making the right decisions and,
right, carpentry.
And measuring and carpentry, exactly. And, you know, kind of just all that went into that project ended up being kind of school, you know, for a good chunk of time.
Something
and,
you just can't get from a textbook.
This is true. And, you know, I don't have anything against textbooks. I want to say one thing I really want to stress is I've known a lot of different homeschooling families, and I've seen people having successful experiences with all kinds of choices. And I think that one of the keys with homeschooling is to allow yourself to make it work for you. You know, there's been times where Chris and I have almost had mild panics where we thought, you know, okay, it's definitely time here for the kids to get some textbook, you know, information in. And we would actually pull out the textbooks and, you know, we would spend some time doing lessons in them. And, you know, when it felt like it was right, and then when it just seemed like, you know, we were kind of hitting a wall and nobody was getting any good information from them anymore, or for the time being, you know, we'd put them back up on the shelf. So I think it can look a lot of different ways and work a lot of different ways. And that's just one thing I would really encourage people, if they're, you know, homeschooling themselves or considering homeschooling, is to allow it to look different and allow it to change as you know, your family changes and your children change. Because that's one of the biggest things I learned over you know, the many, many years of doing it, is it wasn't a constant for us, is that I had to be really flexible.
So individualizing the process for a homeschooler is very important. And of course, it's wonderful that that's even possible, you know, because it wouldn't be possible if they were in a traditional setting to individualize it. And from my perspective, homeschooling is great because teachers are really the first teachers. And in the process of what we've done in institutionalizing everything is parents have lost a lot of their confidence to take this on and to pass what they know on. Like when I think of you as a cook, and when I think of you as a dancer, and when I think of you as someone in drama, and that you could give that to your kids, or when I think of Chris's skills, like you say, you know, building, and his sense of humor, and how, you know, you can't give that. A lot of parents never get to give that to their kids because they're constantly in an institution. And so that's another really, really positive thing about homeschooling from my perspective. And I'm just so glad that you stuck with it and that you continued to do it and you followed that passion that you had to see that your kids got, that Sev and Alex got the very best that they could get, and that you're not denying and saying, oh, this was a piece of cake. There were struggles, but you had the confidence, both you and Chris, to stick with it. And what about the kids? How do they feel, Alex and Sev? Are they happy that they've been homeschooled? Do you feel like they have regrets?
No, I think if you were to ask them, I think I can pretty accurately speak for them because it's something we've talked about a lot, especially Sev has turned 18 and now he's kind of moved on to a different kind of learning. He's taking classes at the community college here. So it's he's going a little bit more mainstream for the time being with that. Alex is still homeschooling. But it, you know, they all along, I never told them that they couldn't go to school. We always made that available to them. That was an available option. So, you know, they knew that, and they both had their times of experiencing something different. After we'd been in Oregon for 2 years, they both decided to go to an alternative school. So while it wasn't a public school setting, it was 5 days a week, a traditional school hours. It's called a village free school. And it's a democratic school, so it's governed by the student body. And it was a really wonderful experience. They both did it for a year. Alex is still really involved with a lot of the students there, and he does an open school program there. So he goes 1 day a week, and that's kind of his way to just sort of keep his finger on the pulse of what's happening there and be involved with things going on. And then he's doing an online school program for a couple subjects that he's interested in, and then he's, you know, taking a couple classes in the community. So, you know, they always have had it available to them, so they've chosen homeschooling, for most of their education. And I think, you know, who knows if they in 5 years or 10 years will look back on it and feel different about it. But right now, I think they both feel really good about the choices that they've made and the experiences that they've had homeschooling. I think they've actually told me, so I know it to be true that they are grateful that they've been able to have the experiences that they have, because they see that a lot of kids don't have that, you know, because of a single parent situation, or just, you know, there's a lot of different reasons why people can't take that path, even if they wanted to.
Yes.
So I think we all feel really grateful as a family that we were able to do it.
Yeah, I'm so proud of you that you followed the children. I think that's really important. Now, how old, to backstep a little bit here, how old was Sev and how old was Alex when they first went into this alternative school that you were discussing?
They started at the free school, about 3 years ago. So they would have been 12 and 15 at the time. Alex decided to go first, and he was there for about 6 months. and just loved it. It's a really, you know, wonderful place, and so, it had so much to offer for him. And then he was so funny. He started coming home every day and saying to Sev, "It's so great. You should come. You should check it out." And so Sev did, and then they both decided to go. So, and they were there for about a year, year and a half, I think.
Yes, I remember.
And then...
Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was just going to add, they racked that up last year, and that's when Sev decided to start going to the community college. And, you know, we had a party to celebrate that he was, you know, deciding to do that. And, you know, it was an informal kind of, you know, using the term loosely graduation. And, you know, it was just really great. He made that decision that he was ready to move on and go a different direction.
Yes. So. I know I use the community college for accelerated, you know, honors classes. As soon as a student I felt was proficient and had passed my abilities in a subject, we just enroll them in a college class here at Mendocino College, and it was wonderful. And so I think it's wonderful that he's going to the community college. Of course, he's 18, but, you know, what a wonderful experience. And he's choosing to go to college, so you know that it wasn't like, an anti-education experience. It was education is a wonderful opening experience. I remember when my own four boys were at the school, and the two oldest, the twins, John and Nico, at 10th grade, and they were the oldest at the school, and they were just ready for something else. And so they decided in 10th grade to go down to the high school in Willits, and where you were at the time, having left our school. And you were just there for them, Amy. I mean, you were saying, "Oh, come on now, you guys, get into jazz choir. Come on, get into, you know, the musicals." And you were just so supportive and there for them 100%. And they, you know, they had shared with me that they had fun at the high school. They didn't learn a lot, but they certainly enjoyed the English, the college prep English classes. They loved that. They loved the musicals, Mr. Garcia, and they loved the art. But, you know, as far as learning. I remember Nico, when he went on to university, passed trigonometry over the phone because they didn't even offer it at the high school. And so, you know, they had a lot of fun, but really you were right there for them. And I can only say that, you know, that has a lot to do with who you are. And so it doesn't surprise me at all that Sev and Alex are such remarkable people. They have remarkable parents. Well, could you tell us how about art and that aspect of education? Have the boys had some experiences there and with plays or with music?
Well, Sev, a couple years ago, taught himself how to play the guitar with some help from some great family members, and has kind of taken that and really it's become part of who he is and what he loves to do. And that was kind of what we agreed when he decided he wanted to kind of wrap up his homeschooling and schooling experience. And, you know, since then has decided to take classes at the community college. But, you know, we talked about, well, what could kind of be a culmination of your experience schooling, and what could that look like? And he agreed he was going to make an album. And he had a mentor that he was working with in the community who's a musician, and he recorded an album that has 6 or 7 songs on it. And it was really great and a very, very touching experience as a mom to watch him do. And, you know, for me to not be a part of it, it was his project, and it was really exciting. So he's really into music. They both are artistic. Never really been moved to do theater, but both have taken, you know, clay classes and working with clay, ceramics classes and art classes and, you know, so put themselves out there that way. And I have never really found it to be a problem, you know, to find incredible things in the different communities that we've lived in being offered, whether it was specifically for homeschoolers or just being offered in general in the community. It sometimes takes a little bit of legwork and research to find those things, but everywhere we've lived, there's just been incredible programs that we've been able to tap into. So our homeschooling experience all along hasn't been, you know, just Chris and I giving them their lessons. We've always been able to tap into
the community.
The community, and people and, you know, people who are really passionate about what they do. And that's just a wonderful way to learn, is to be with somebody who's passionate about what they do.
Oh, I agree.
And when we lived in Los Angeles, Chris worked at he worked as an art assistant in a studio. And so we, for a while, set up with some of the people he worked with. They were kind of doing classes with the kids and, you know, making molds. And I taught a homeschool class to make puppets, and it culminated in this really wonderful puppet show. And so we kind of always had, you know, something along the artistic lines going on, because for me, that's one of my passions. I love to be crafty. I love to make things. So as long as the kids, you know, were interested, I was doing projects with them, and we were finding things to do in the greater community.
Right. And you're not only a wonderful artist, you're an amazing dancer. I want the listeners to know that, too. But, well, let's talk about practical life, too. Cooking. Do the boys do some cooking?
They do. We used to, it actually used to be a source of great laughter in our family. Chris would come home from being, you know, gone at work all day, and the kids would have baked a wonderful cake and sewn some wonderful, you know, pillow or something. So it was like the home ec aspect never was neglected, because, you know, I had two sons and I was just going to do my projects anyway, you know, and they were always very enthusiastic about it, more so when they were younger. But they do, you know, they both can are very proficient in the kitchen and cooking and cleaning. And, you know, I've always taken a stance that it takes everybody in the household to run a household. And so, you know, that's not to say we haven't had our struggles with having to say 10 times, take the garbage out, please. But it, you know, like, I have just always really tried to help hold them accountable for participating and keeping the house running. And I think that those are skills that, unfortunately, sometimes get lost when everybody's gone from the house all day. And, you know, I see people struggling with getting home late at night and having to leave early in the morning. And, you know, that makes me sad. It makes me sad that kids don't learn, you know, kind of household skills. But I'm a house person, so I feel strongly about it.
Yes, I feel strongly about that too. And I just love it that, you know, just because they're boys, they still learned how to cook and clean, as well as the carpentry skills, right? And the building skills, you know, that's so wonderful. They're so well-rounded, you know, they have those skills that make them just, you know, comfortable in the world and not dependent on others, which is go ahead.
I just wanted to say, one of the things I always just really wanted, the experience that I wanted to give them, was to just expose them to things. You know, I don't expect that they will necessarily have the same passions that I have or that Chris has, but, you know, I wanted them to just at least have minimal exposure to different things, because I feel like
they have choices now.
Yeah, exactly. And to be with somebody who's passionate about what they do is, you know, that in and of itself is an experience. So, you know, for instance, Sev connecting with this wonderful man Gavin up here in Portland, who has been his mentor the last year and a half, 2 years, and who he helped him to record that album. You know, it's that is an experience that, you know, it's just a really wonderful thing to be with somebody who's passionate about what they do.
Yes,
whether you decide, you know, that activity is for you or not, it's the experience of being with somebody that really loves what they do.
Yes, I so agree with you. I think you're right on the button. And then what about gardening? And, you know, have the kids done gardening? And I know that you are into organic food. But I don't know if you have a garden.
We've never really been gardeners. We've done, you know, container gardening here and there, but
yes,
that has never really been a part of our family's, you know, project.
Right.
I'm a huge fan of farmers markets, and here in Portland we have they're really quite phenomenal. So, you know, we've always done that. And, you know, they understand certainly where food comes from. That has been a, you know, something I've put out there. But
right.
I can't say we're gardeners. Nope.
I do my gardening in containers, too, just because I live in a very small space. But I find that it's very rewarding. But how about, you know, knowing the plants and, you know, in the wild and things like that. Do you feel that they've gotten a good handle on that aspect, which I feel that a lot of schools ignore or neglect that aspect?
I think that they both have a pretty great depth of knowledge regarding that, but I can't take credit for that. That, I have to say, has come from the incredible wealth of family that they have that knows so much about that and is so passionate about that. You know, Chris's mom and my mom and Chris's brothers, and, you know, they just have been really lucky that we have a large family and a tight family, and everybody has, fortunately for us, been extremely supportive of our choice to homeschool our boys for all these years and have really always stepped up to be a part of, you know, their experience and offer, you know, where their passions are and where their expertise are. So, you know, to share their knowledge with the kids, I would say that's where that's come from. And, you know, I'd say they both probably have a pretty good head on their shoulders, probably better than a lot of kids who do go the traditional public school route. But I don't know that that's necessarily because of, you know, because of something in particular that we did. I think it's more just what they've been exposed to, because they spent so few hours in a traditional classroom.
Right. And both the Bell family and the Boosinger family are amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I can vouch for that for sure. And I love it that the knowledge of the wild that you grew up in has been extended to them through their grandparents and their uncles and aunts. That's just a further extension of, you know, their learning experience. It's so beautiful, really beautiful.
Thank you.
Well,
and part of that, I think that I was just going to add really quick, part of that has come from we've moved around a bit, and we've lived, you know, in Los Angeles, and then when we moved to Oregon, we were living quite rural, you know, an hour outside of the city on some property, and then, you know, we've been in Portland proper in the city. So they've had a lot of different experiences in their environment, and I think that's really added to it also.
Yeah, it just sounds so beautiful. Do either of them talk about sort of the future, or is it just still, is it pretty open what they, you know, what they...
They both, you know, they have an incredible bond, the two of them, and so a lot of which I feel very fortunate for.
And that's a credit to you and Chris.
Well, thank you. I think, you know, part of it is you know, the experiences that they've had growing up, and I think some of it ends up being, you know, luck of the draw at the end. But it they both want to travel. They both, you know, have plans of, you know, different kinds of school. Some, you know, talk of college, some talk of, you know, work programs and mentoring programs. And, you know, I think they're both at a place, being 15 and 18 years old, that the world is their oyster. And they, you know, kind of think that they can do anything and be anything.
And they can.
Because
they can.
Yeah, absolutely. They can. So it's fun to listen to them talk and, you know, scary sometimes as a parent and, you know, looking around at the crazy world that we're in. And I think, you know, I hope and wish that whatever you choose to do, you know, you enjoy it and you find joy and passion in it. And that's all you can really hope for your children.
Yes, I agree. Now, what about the subject of technology? You know, the kids are they pretty proficient with the computer?
Yes.
Isn't that wonderful?
I would say definitely yes. They both, they're my tech gurus. Any questions I have, I go to them, and they seem to always be able to figure out whatever the problem is, you know. But Alex has this past year, he's been doing, like I mentioned before, an online program, doing some subjects online. So his homeschooling experience this past year has been very tech-based, and, you know, he's doing Rosetta Stone Spanish, and that's all online, and he's got, so they're both really plugged in. I was resistant a couple of years ago when computers definitely were making a much bigger presence in our life, and my resistance was coming from that I just didn't want it to become a habit that wasn't, that kind of ended up dominating what they had going on. So, like, for instance, you know, computer games, they, you know, would get a new game, and that would be all that they'd want to do. And I'd go with it for a while, and then I kind of just would have to go with my gut. And once in a while, I'd have to say, this isn't really working for me anymore. I kind of need, I want to ask you to try and diversify your time a little bit. So I think that there's definitely a balance that can happen as they get older. You know, they certainly have been able to kind of do more self-regulating. And but I think technology can play, I mean, it's an incredible, incredible source of information that's out there. So I think it's a matter of just checking in with yourself every now and then and make sure it's working for you.
Right. Yes, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. And I love the way that you phrase it when you have concerns. It's not working for me. I think this is wonderful. I really do feel it's important that people be, and students, kids, be proficient with technology. And when you say you were leaning on them to show you, well, I have the same thing, leaning on my students, on my children, and now on my granddaughters, you know, to teach me more and more, because they are so proficient with this technology. And I know that a lot of people, a great many people who homeschool have an aversion to technology of any kind. And so I wanted to bring that up because I know that listeners would be curious about that particular topic. And I myself am very supportive of the technology. I think it's a tool like any other that you can abuse, but it's a great, it can be a great service, information and solving problems and critical thinking. So I'm glad to hear that the boys are proficient and that you're supportive, but you're watching. You're not just abandoning them to it like a lot of people did with television, for instance. So that's really great to hear, Amy. Well, could you talk now a little bit about what you're doing yourself? What are you exploring right now?
Sure. I kind of have a lot of different plates spinning. We're about to make a big move. We've been in Portland for the past 2 years, and the 2 years before that, we were living an hour outside of Portland on a piece of property, and it's a different lifestyle for sure. And we're about to make the move back out there, so that's exciting. So our life is really full with all that happens when you're gearing up for a move. I have a small natural body care business called Pink Sky Body that I love doing, and it has been asleep the last couple years, and it's just starting to come alive again, and I'm enjoying that. And I spend a lot of time. I have a little art studio. I sew and I enjoy doing that. And I kind of, for me, one of the things that I need to do to keep myself sane is to make things. There isn't always an idea in the end of where it's going to go or what it's going to do, and sometimes it peters out halfway through. But I like to do. I like to make. And I just recently finished a program. I was trained as a nutritional therapist, and so I'm slowly building a clientele here in Portland and loving that. And I occasionally take a dance class, and I live a very full and rich life, and I feel very lucky to be able to do so.
Oh, yes. So the website is pinkskybody.com. Is that right?
Correct. And it's that's correct. And it's a work in progress. There's no question about that. It was a thriving business, and for various reasons, kind of went off the radar, and it's just getting back up and going again. So the website is a work in progress, as is a lot of other things that I have going on, because that's, you know, just kind of how I like to have things be.
Yeah, that's
always changing and working and
right.
The process.
And you've just finished your training, as you mentioned, as a nutritional therapy practitioner, which I think sounds very exciting. And you're still dancing and cooking and doing crafts, which is just wonderful and pretty comfortable in the world, wouldn't you say?
What was the last thing you said?
I would say that you're pretty comfortable in the world.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I you know, like I mentioned, I feel incredibly blessed.
Yeah, well, I feel blessed that you were part of my life. I'll tell you that, and I want the listener to know that at one point I got sick, and then the whole family had a terrible flu, and so we just couldn't have school that day. And I go out on the steps, and there is this huge pot of chicken soup that has been delivered by Amy Boosinger and her mom to the Melville family. Just so beautiful. And that kind of caring, that kind of love is something that is so precious and so meaningful. And when I think that, you know, it's lucky. We're lucky to have people like you and Chris and Seven Alex in this world, and great to know, you know, individuals who followed their passion, followed their love, care about each other, and it's very exciting. Well, Amy, would you say that you would encourage others who want to homeschool to go for it?
Yes, of course. I think that, you know, if you feel moved to do it, to try it, then by all means. I can't say that I think it's the only way to go. I think that there's a lot of different ways. There's so many options really for schools out there. So really what I would encourage people is, if what they had going on, whether it be homeschooling or traditional public school or anything in between, is just to know that there are options. And even though sometimes it can feel, you know, you can feel overwhelmed by it, you know, just be open to changing things up, so that everybody in your family feels like they're getting the most out of their experience. Because I think, you know, a successful education, you know, making little quotations with my fingers for education, can look a lot of different ways for a lot of different people. So, you know, if someone's feeling moved to homeschool, I say by all means, you know, try it. I think it's a wonderful way to go, but I don't think it's the only way to go. And so I just encourage people to, you know, to try different things and follow different paths and, you know, stick for however long with the thing that's working for you at the time.
Yes.
Be willing to try different things.
So essentially what you're saying is follow what you want. You're not proselytizing for homeschooling. You're saying it worked for you, and you're encouraging others who want to do it to go for it, but you're not saying it's the only way.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, for us it really did work. And we were lucky to be able to do it and to continue to do it. But yeah, exactly. I don't, you know, by no means do I think it's the only way and the right way and, you know, the best way. I just think that there's a lot of different ways that education can look. And so I just encourage people to kind of work with whatever they have going on so that it feels good for all parties involved, you know, whether that be homeschooling or a different kind of schooling.
Well, I couldn't have said it better myself. I think that that's wonderful. It's not for everyone, but if they want to do it, go for it and don't be afraid. I myself am enjoying very much working with homeschooling families and encouraging parents that if this is something they want to do, they can do it. That, you know, not to be afraid. And
yeah.
You're a wonderful model for that. And so I'm just so thrilled that you agreed to be on the show today, Amy. And I just send you and your family all my love. And I thank you again and again for this interview.
Well, thank you, Athena. I appreciate you inviting me to be on. And it's truly been an honor. And I, you know, I feel really lucky to be able to share my experience with people. So thank you.
Bye now.
Bye.
Thank you to those of you who joined me tonight for this Focus on Homeschooling with Amy Boosinger. If you want to connect with Amy, please go to her website, 3Ws.PinkSkyBody, all one word, PinkSkyBody.com. On Thursday, May 30th, I'm delighted to bring you a roundtable discussion when Marcy Creever, Senior Director of Communications and Marketing at the American Montessori Society, and Marie Conte, Senior Director of School Accreditation and Member Programs at the American Montessori Society, join me, Athena Melville, to discuss education, Montessori, and American Montessori events and conferences in the future. Education Now is a production of the Hermeneutic Institute for Holistic Health and Education, a 501c3 nonprofit corporation. An archive of all broadcasts can be heard with free download at the website. I am going to go out with this wonderful talk by Severin Suzuki, speaking for Echo, which I first shared with you on the November 9th, 2009 edition of Education Now. I was led to this talk by Severin Suzuki by Amy Boosinger, which you will discover when you hear the clip. Enjoy, and I will say goodbye now, and thank you so much for listening. Here we're going to listen to something which I think is wonderful. It's a speech by a 13-year-old girl named Severin Suzuki, delivered at the January 2009 United Nations Conference on Environment and Development. And it was a lead from an old student, Amy Boosinger, who is homeschooling her own kids now and whose mother, Donna DeTerra, you've heard on this program before. So.
Yeah.
Yes, she lives in Portland. And John is where? Where are you right now, John?
Portland.
John is in Portland. Okay, so let's go to this, okay, John?
Okay.
Hello, I'm Severin Suzuki, speaking for ECHO, the Environmental Children's Organization. We're a group of 12 and 13-year-olds trying to make a difference. Vanessa Setti, Morgan Geisler, Michelle Quigg, and me. We've raised all the money to come here ourselves, to come 5,000 miles to tell you adults you must change your ways. Coming up here today, I have no hidden agenda. I am fighting for my future. Losing my future is not like losing an election or a few points on the stock market. I am here to speak for all generations to come. I am here to speak on behalf of the starving children around the world whose cries go unheard. I am here to speak for the countless animals dying across this planet because they have nowhere left to go. I am afraid to go out in the sun now because of the holes in our ozone. I am afraid to breathe the air because I don't know what chemicals are in it. I used to go fishing in Vancouver, my home, with my dad, until just a few years ago we found the fish full of cancers. And now we hear of animals and plants going extinct every day, vanishing forever. In my life, I have dreamt of seeing the great herds of wild animals, jungles and rainforests full of birds and butterflies. But now I wonder if they will even exist for my children to see. Did you have to worry of these things when you were my age? All this is happening before our eyes, and yet we act as if we have all the time we want and all the solutions. I'm only a child, and I don't have all the solutions. But I want you to realize, neither do you. You don't know how to fix the holes in our ozone layer. You don't know how to bring the salmon back up in a dead stream. You don't know how to bring back an animal now extinct. And you can't bring back the forest that once grew where there is now a desert. If you don't know how to fix it, please stop breaking it. Here, you may be delegates of your government, business people, organizers, reporters, or politicians, but really, your mothers and fathers, sisters and brothers, aunts and uncles, and all of you are someone's child. I'm only a child, yet I know we are all part of a family, 5 billion strong, in fact, 30 million species strong, and borders and governments will never change that. I'm only a child, yet I know we are all in this together and should act as one single world towards one single goal. In my anger, I am not blind, and in my fear, I am not afraid of telling the world how I feel. In my country, you make so much waste. We buy and throw away, buy and throw away, buy and throw away, and yet northern countries will not share with the needy. Even when we have more than enough, we are afraid to share. We are afraid to let go of some of our wealth. In Canada, we live the privileged life with plenty of food, water, and shelter. We have watches, bicycles, computers, and television sets. The list could go on for 2 days. 2 days ago here in Brazil, we were shocked when we spent time with some children living on the streets. This is what one child told us. I wish I was rich. And if I were, I would give all the street children food, clothes, medicines, shelter, and love and affection. If a child on the streets who has nothing is willing to share, why are we who have everything still so greedy? I can't stop thinking that these are children my own age, that it makes a tremendous difference where you are born. That I could be one of those children living in the favelas of Rio. I could be a child starving in Somalia, or a victim of war in the Middle East, or a beggar in India. I am only a child, yet I know if all the money spent on war was spent on finding environmental answers, ending poverty, and finding treaties, what a wonderful place this earth would be. At school, even in kindergarten, you teach us how to behave in the world. You teach us to not to fight with others, to work things out, to respect others, to clean up our mess, not to hurt other creatures, to share, not be greedy. Then why do you go out and do the things you tell us not to do? Do not forget why you are attending these conferences, who you're doing this for. We are your own children. You are deciding what kind of a world we are growing up in. Parents should be able to comfort their children by saying, everything's going to be all right. It's not the end of the world. And we're doing the best we can. But I don't think you can say that to us anymore. Are we even on your list of priorities? My dad always says, you are what you do, not what you say. Well, what you do makes me cry at night. You grown-ups say you love us, but I challenge you, please, make your actions reflect your words. Thank you.
And there you have it.